The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, welcome back to Sports Talk 1240, hour number two, starting up right now. Just for those hardcores that are sticking with me tonight, the big game, Philadelphia leads New England 22-19. New England creeping back. Like the Addams Family. New England coming back. Don't count them out, folks. Well, we're back with Sports Talk 1240, as I said. I hope you're enjoying the show tonight. We've had some great interviews, and we're going to carry on. My next guest, best known as the rhythm guitarist for Billy Joel's band from 76 to 89. These days, he's found with his former bandmates in a band called the Lords of 52nd Street. We'll talk to him about that. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Russell Javers. Russell, good evening.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
It's great to have you with us, Russell.
Oh, good to be here.
Wonderful.
Okay. I can't believe you want to talk to me. It's Super Sunday, and it's 29-19 now.
Oh, man. Well, at least they're opening up a little cushion, you know. Oh, man. As I said to you, though, in the email, I believe, I do my best work on Super Bowl Sunday. I've had Butch Trucks on.
Cool.
So, yeah, poor Butch no longer with us. I do some good work, and I give people an alternative to the big game, and I just enjoy working on Super Bowl Sunday. That's it.
It's good to be here, man.
That's my tattertale. Who are some of your early influences, Russell?
Oh, my God. I'm 65 years old, so I grew up with the Beatles and Stones.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole British invasion. But, you know, also, the first record I ever bought, and Lib and I were talking about this the other day, was the Four Seasons. And those were some great rhythm sections and great tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so those were some great records. Those were in my house. So everything from, you know, Ray Charles and Nat Cole and you know, so it was kind of mixed, you know.
Yeah.
I just love music.
Sure. Now, people may not know, but you guys have been playing together since you're like 15 years old, you and Liberty.
Me and Lib, yeah, maybe even a little before that.
Wow,
Lib has a picture of me and with my hair, like, you know, like Kaepernick, you know.
yeah.
You know, a white afro. And, you know, but I must have been 14 years old in his living room and when he lived in Seaford at his parents' house. And that's how long we go back.
Yeah.
There used to be a club in Plainview called My House.
Okay.
And Billy was one of the house bands, but the other house band was a band called the New Rock Workshop, and they alternated days, and we'd go there after school to. And I played there a couple times too, but I was a little bit younger than those guys. But I used to, you know, I loved both of those bands, but you know, Billy hadn't found himself yet, so he was still, you know, finding his voice. But I always thought Liberty was like a superstar, so back then, I was a baby, and I said, that's it. I'm going to be in a band with this guy, and I pestered him until we were.
Yeah, I've had Liberty on the show before. He's quite entertaining, to say the least.
Character.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Now, he's housebroken now.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you had the late Doug Stegmeier in the band called Topper. Mm-hmm. How about that particular ensemble?
Well, you know, I've been writing songs since since I'm about that, even when I first met Lib, and I knew Liberty first, and then this great keyboard player from Syosset, a guy named Dean Krause, who played with us early on. He introduced me to Doug, and I had also been playing with another guitar player from Plainview, Howard Emerson, great guitar player. So collectively, you know, we'd all, you know, work together to frame my songs, and that's how we started. So Doug's brother had a studio, you know, was an engineer, great musician as well, and he would always, you know, take time with us and get us in the studio. So we started developing that chemistry and that respect for framing a song rather than just playing over everything. And by the time we got to Billy, we really, you know, had this thing going that that our producer Phil noticed right away, and it was we had our act down, so I think we were an easy bunch for Billy to work with, because nobody was out for himself. We just really understood what made a song, and we were open to anything, and so it was a lot of fun. You know, it was just having that experience and working with those songs and doing it with your best friends. I mean, it was a dream come true. It was great.
Yeah, I talking to people during the week about you coming on the show tonight, I impressed upon them the importance of that first band. I said, these guys were on the albums. These guys played all these classic songs on vinyl. They're going to be around forever. And to me, that's the importance of the original guys with Doug, yourself, Liberty, Richie, and whoever else was there. Talk a little bit, Russell, about one of your favorite albums from those days.
Oh, boy. You know, it's so funny because I don't know the albums. You know, I say, oh, what album was that song on? I mean, there's a couple, like, as a band, I thought we played great on Nylon Curtain. We played, it always felt like, a band. But that was kind of, it sounds like such a complicated record, and it took a long time to do. But most of those really cool tracks, were live. There's even a lot of the fills. David Brown played guitar on that album. He was great. And, so it's just, you really heard that we really had it together as a band and was, but all the albums had interesting stuff on them. Turnstiles was the first one I did.
Right.
And there were so many good songs on that, but it's funny, we kind of did it ourselves. There was no producer, and, so we just did our thing, and with really nobody overseeing it. And then by the time it got mixed, we went to Caribou Ranch in Colorado, and it kind of took a different shape. And to me, some of those earlier versions that were a little bit more rough, I almost like better than the finished one. But the songs were there. You could tell that New York State of Mind, Say Goodbye to Hollywood, Angry Young Man, Summer Highland Falls, a lot of great songs. Mm-hmm. And when the Lords play, we really pay respect to the way that we did it originally. We do it in the original keys. We do it with the same energy that we did back then. So it's kind of fun, and we have just as much fun as we used to. So a lot of people say, wow, you guys really sound like the records. I say, well, yeah, that's us.
It's kind of us,
Yeah.
I have these albums in every iteration, Russell. I remember getting the Stranger album on 8-track tape. I was a freshman at SUNY Oswego, and the guys would take a study break, come to my room, and we'd blast scenes from an Italian restaurant or something like that, and then everybody would go back to hit the books again. But stories like that you must hear all the time.
Well, it's funny. I didn't play on the Stranger. I did the Stranger tour. Right, and I played on Turnstiles. I was doing my sessions with the same guys. In fact, Billy even sat in and played on my stuff. And then when the record company found out that the band I was using was the same band that Billy was using, everything kind of took a little backward step. And then I went back on the road with Billy. I did a couple songs on 52nd Street, and I did that tour as well. And then everything afterwards. Then it looked like, it was going to be with Billy. Which was more than fine with me. It was, I had a wonderful time.
Let's talk a little bit about Russia, Russell. Russell Javers with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240, talking about Billy Joel Band, The Lords of 52nd Street. The trip to Russia and the whole documentary that was released on that. Liberty had some great stories to tell about that time. How was it living there, the food, the people, the crowds? How did you decide the set lists? Talk a little bit about it.
Well, it's funny. My dad's family was from Russia. And never said anything about it. I saw this show on TV about Larry David and Bernie Sanders, and they both came from the same, their families both came from the same place in Russia, and neither one of their families would talk about it at all. And that was my family. My dad, I couldn't get anything out of him. I wanted to see, you know, maybe there's some relatives of theirs, bars or something. Nothing, you know, not a word. So, but it was interesting. The people were wonderful. They would give you the shirt off their back. They loved having us there. So it was nothing like we expected. And you know, we brought, we knew that, you know, all the records and music they can get was all black market stuff because nothing was really sanctioned.
Yeah.
So we brought tons of records and strings and stuff. All the, you know, all the officers and stuff were around. They wanted to grab all the stuff so they could sell it on the black market. So it was really kind of weird. So we'd be slipping stuff in people's pockets. And I met this one guy, and we're talking about, you know, music. And he said, oh, my favorite, you know, my favorite artists are Bob Dylan and Mark Knopfler. And it just so happens there's a, that month a record had come out that both of them were on. It was a record called Infidels, a Bob Dylan album, and Knopfler played guitar. And I said, you know, you're not going to believe this, but they just made a record together, and I've got it upstairs, so just be cool, and I'll stick it in your pocket.
Yeah.
And so the guy was, like, freaking out. And I said, you have no idea. I can, you know, I can go and get another one of these, you know, in a blink. It doesn't mean any, you know, anything. I want you to have it. So I stuck in his pocket. Turns out this guy was a soldier, and at the show, he brought me his uniform hat. He got through, and he says, here, you gave me something, and I want you to have something of mine.
Wow.
And he gave me, I still have that. So the people were wonderful. The initial audience was very weird because it was all like government people and stuff, and they had their fingers in their ears, and they hated it. And we thought we were bombing for that, you know, during the first show, and Billy was nervous as hell. And then those people got up and left, and they let the kids who were waiting outside in, and then everything started to open up and take off. So it was really, really cool. My first memory of that is I guess it was the World Series. I'm trying to remember what month it was, but there was a lot of reporters with us, and we're getting ready to go on stage, and the thing was being simulcast, and we're doing a documentary, and we're doing a live album. So it was like, you know, there was a nice buzz going on, and we were all, you know, up for it. But the reporters came over just as the lights go out and the music started up, and they say to us, and Billy was off talking to somebody else, you know, this is a momentous occasion. What are you guys thinking? What's going through your head? And Liberty grabs the microphone. He goes, all right, you commies, let's boogie. And then the music started, and we ran up on stage. So that's my memory of those shows.
Outstanding. Well, shortly after all the albums and all the history, the lineup changes take place. Now, what precipitated the lineup changes in the band? I mean, was it Billy's feeling?
I'm sure it was. I don't know. You know,
it's
kind of weird. You know, the way I looked at it was, I was disappointed, obviously, and he's not married to us, and if after all those years he's not being inspired, then he's a right to use whoever he wants. My only beef with the situation was that after all those years, here's how I found out. I'm driving around. You know, usually it works that you go on the road and you do the record, and then you wait. And, you know, you do a tour to support the record. Then you wait, and you write some songs, and then you get the call, and you come and do it again. Well, that's how it was for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in holding pattern, and I'm driving around one day. I'm hearing the record. Billy Joel has a new band and a new album. That's how I found out. Nobody, no call, no nothing.
Jeez.
So Billy's repeated that story and admits he could have handled it better. But said that, you know, it took me a while to deal with the way it happened. Not, you know, I mean, look, life goes on. Like I said, you know, it's, if it were me and it was my band, I wasn't getting what I needed out of the guys, you know, and, you know, you make the change. But I got to tell you something. We were very prolific when we were there. And, you know, we left. There was a couple albums after that. And, you know, what has it been, like 25 years without an album?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that we, you know, that group of guys can feel very proud of what we accomplished together and the stuff that we did together. And that's seems to be the time of his career that that a lot of his diehard fans really focus on and celebrate. And I think that's why what we're doing, which is just a celebration of the music, it's all in good faith. I hope Billy, I would think that he would be very proud of what we're doing, and hopefully he'll come in and sit in with us.
Yeah.
But that's what we're doing.
I agree with everything you said, Russell. Yeah.
His legacy and our legacy, and it's all positive, and there's no negativity here. We're having a great time, and those are great songs, and we're putting our thumbprint on them like we always did.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it's all good, and we have a lot of fun, and the crowd has a lot of fun. And, it's all good.
Now, you have the band, the Big Shot Band that mm-hmm. Del Judas has. I've never seen them.
Mm-hmm.
What separates you guys from Big Shot? I realize that you guys are the original.
Band and we're not.
Okay, yeah.
We're the band. Those guys, no matter what they do, they're copying what we do, what we did on those records.
Exactly, right.
But, Michael's a very talented guy, and I've done stuff with him before, and he's, we've all sat in together. So, obviously there's room for everybody to do what they do. But I think the thing that's special about what we do is the one thing that we're not is a tribute band. We are the guys that made those records. And I think it's very obvious when you hear us play that we're the real deal, so.
Right.
So definitely come down and check it out, man, because I think you'll
I
be
will. I think my wife
impressed.
Would enjoy it as well. Now, yeah. Do you ever see Billy Russell?
I haven't seen him in a little while, but it's always been cool when we did. I lived in Hong Kong for many years before coming back to the U.S., and he was playing there, and they were looking for me, and I sat in with him there, and I sat in with him in Detroit, and I sat in with him here in Florida. So it's always been good. And friendly and cool. So it's he's in a different place. I could never pretend to walk in his shoes or understand where he's coming from, and he's earned the right to do whatever the hell he wants to do. So I would like to think that there's a good feeling and a good mutual respect between mm-hmm. everybody. I know different guys have different issues and situations, but I've always been really cool with it, and I would hope to think that they would feel the same.
Yeah. Russell Driver's with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. It must be great, Russell, though, you heard my small story from Oswego about the Stranger album.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the other albums that have touched people and their lives. Is it great hearing those stories when they come up to you and tell you?
Yeah, we do a really long meet and greet at the end of every show.
Oh, nice.
Everybody brings their albums and stuff. And we hear a lot of bands charge for that and stuff. And you know what? We'll sit and talk and take pictures and have fun. We feel very blessed to be where we are right now. And more than anything, to be together again. I mean, it's, you forget, things change and everybody goes in their different directions, and we got together by accident, and it just felt so natural and so cool. This is not something that we thought about doing or planned. It just happened. And I forgot how much I love these guys and how much, not only as musicians, but they're my friends. And so it's like taking a step back in time for us, because all the hijinks and all the shenanigans that go on when we get together.
Yeah.
I mean, Liberty's Libby's crazy, and Richie's a funny guy, and we have a lot of fun. So that's every bit as cool for me as the opportunity to get up and play again with these guys, which was the most focal part of my life, and here we are doing it again, so I really feel blessed.
Nice, nice. Now, we are a sports show, Russell. I do take liberties on Super Bowl Sunday and have my musical guests in, but you told mm-hmm. a very interesting story, and I'll tie it in mm-hmm. with our theme about the death of Oscar Gamble this week,
mm-hmm.
and relate that to the folks, if you would.
Well, it was... It's funny. I wrote a little thing. You know, when Oscar passed, I met him very briefly.
Right.
So I'm not going to pretend that we were friends, but it's funny when you meet certain people and you can tell right away if they're a good spirit or not. He projected a really cool vibe. I was lucky enough when we were in the band, a lot of the Yankee guys followed us and would hang out with us, would come to the shows and you know, Phil would have parties and Yankee guys would be there. I'd go to Billy's house and Pinello would be there and we got to meet Mercer and a bunch of guys, and it was just friendly and casual. I wouldn't say that we were all great friends, but a couple of guys we got closer to. I mean, I knew Gossage a little bit, and I was pretty close with Guidry. And so one day, Guidry was involved in something. His business manager was with him, and another guy that I knew. And he had a night game, but he was out on Long Island doing something, and stopped by my place before he was going to drive into the Bronx. So he said, "Come on, you know, let's go." And, you know, so I drove into, you know, to the stadium with Guidry, and walk into the stadium, and there's Yogi in his boxer shorts, and Rizzuto walking through, and I'm getting to meet, you know, all the guys. I'd met a couple of them before, but you know, there you are all day, you know, and you're picking at the cold cut table and hanging out. And I said, "Wow, this is like a dream." Because I grew up such a diehard Yankee fan that this was like, you know, it's just this year that I'm saying to myself, it's probably not likely that I'm ever going to play second base for the Yankees. You know, Torres looks like he's going to be the real deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I always held that in the back of my, you know, in the back of my mind that maybe it'll happen. Okay, now I'm giving up on the dream.
Yeah.
But in those days, like, you know, it was music and family and Yankees. You know, they were all kind of rolled up in the same thing. So anyway, so here I am, and I was born on Friday the 13th in June. Liberty's daughter was also born on June 13th on a Friday, but many years later. So it's kind of funny that we both shared the birthday and the Friday the 13th. But so all my luggage tags on the road were 13. All my uniform numbers when we had a softball team or something, always a 13. So I always liked the number 13. So I'm in the clubhouse, and there's this guy, and he's, like, huge. This guy, Bobby Brown, who
okay.
was a reserve outfielder for the Yankees. And I saw his 13. I said, "Oh, that's, you know, that's the number, you know, whatever." I said the thing. So Bobby Brown over here said, and he says, "Well, here, you can have a jersey. So I tried the thing on. It's like a bedspread on me.
Yeah.
So I said, "This isn't going to work, you know." So Guidry goes over and talks to, you know, one of the guys in the clubhouse and arranged for me to have home and away uniforms. And it was like it was nothing premeditated. It just kind of happened. Boom, boom, boom.
Nice.
And
yeah.
Oscar Gamble overhears this, and he says, "Well, you can have my socks and my belt. You can, you know, finish it off." So that was my Oscar Gamble story, and that was about the amount of interaction we had. But I said, "What a cool, you know, it, like he got caught up in it. You know, it was just a throwaway thing that just happened really fast." But I said, "What a cool guy," and
yeah.
You know, he just had a good vibe. And I knew the other guys thought he was a good spirit, and you know, you could kind of feel that camaraderie with some of those guys. So, and here I am, just an outsider and an observer, but you know, I'll always remember him for that, you know, and that's my Oscar Gamble story.
Great story, Russell. Great story. Well, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight. I thank you for taking time out of your Super Bowl Sunday to give us a few minutes, and I really appreciate
talking to you. Come see the Lords. We're playing on February 23rd, I think it is, at the Space in Westbury.
Oh, okay, the Space, yes.
Yeah, come check it out.
Okay, thank you, Russell. You take
care.
The
28th or the 23rd, you got to look it up. But it's coming up. And one other thing before I go, did you see Bernie Williams played with us on our last gig?
Exactly.
Awesome.
Nice. Yeah, that must have been cool.
He'll do some more stuff with us, too. So definitely come check it out, and look forward to seeing you there.
All right, Russell, you have a good night. I'll stay in touch with you.
All right, buddy.
Take care. Russell Javis, folks. Next up, a recorded interview with Rolling Stones piano player Chuck Lavelle. Stick around, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, folks, thanks for sticking around. I appreciate it. The big game, in case you're wondering, Philadelphia 32, New England 26 in Super Bowl 52. Philadelphia hanging on, about 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter there. Well, right now, we're going to play a recorded interview with former Allman Brother and present-day Rolling Stones keyboard player Chuck Lavelle. Chuck, he discusses his favorite Alabama Crimson Tide, his days with the Allman Brothers, and, of course, his days touring now with the Rolling Stones. So I'll be with you February 18th. I'll see you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Right now, let's enjoy Chuck Lavelle, folks. Have a good night.
From the heart of the nautical mile, you're listening to the station that serves your community. AM 1240, WGBB.com. And 1240 WGBB Freeport.
The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB. The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily...
All right, well, my next guest is a member of the Allman Brothers Band during the height of their 70s popularity. He's a founding member of the jazz rock combo C-Level, frequently used session musician, and a longtime touring member of the Rolling Stones. He's also toured and recorded with Eric Clapton, George Harrison, Government Mule, John Mayer. I'm going to welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Mr. Chuck Lavelle. Chuck, good evening.
Hey, Bill. How are you, man?
It's great to have you with us, Chuck.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Good to be talking with you.
No worries. Now, you're an Alabama boy and pretty much a self-taught musician, right?
That is correct. Yes, sir. Roll Tide.
Yeah, Roll Tide. Now, we'll talk a little bit about that later on, but now, you started your first band called The Misfits with a Z in 1966. Now, you played at the YMCA, and you also played on a TV show called Tuscaloosa Bandstand. Give us a little insight into that.
Oh, man, you're taking me way back now, brother. Well, I guess I was about 13 years old. We had our first band, The Misfits, and we wound up playing the YMCA every Friday night for the kids, and eventually the first television station, WCFT, came to Tuscaloosa, and they wanted to emulate American Bandstand, and they came up with a very clever title, Tuscaloosa Bandstand.
Yes.
And they invited us to be the band, and then there was a local DJ, a guy named Tiger Jack Garrett, that was the MC of the TV show.
The Dick Clark of Tuscaloosa.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were riding high, man. We had the gig on Friday night and then Saturday morning, and we would rehearse in my mother's living room, move some furniture around, set up the band, and play, and we'd learn all the hits of that week, you know, whether it was a lot of British Invasion, oddly enough, back then. So, you know, that's what got me familiar early on with all that music. And then, you know, of course, there was indigenous Southern music. There was rhythm and blues and soul and Wilson Pickett and, you know, Aretha Franklin and all that good stuff. So, you know, we were doing it at a young age, and we were having a blast, and good stuff was going on around the University of Alabama, and we would play free concerts at the Quadrant with the band, which was made up largely of Alabama musicians. And, you know, that was kind of my first experience traveling the country. You know, we had a Ford LTD station wagon. We had about six guys in there. And, you know, we'd drive from Macon, Georgia to Maine and work our way all up and down the eastern seaboard. And, of course, we also went all the way out to California and played out there and everywhere in between. So that was my first real road dog experience, I guess you'd say.
Okay. Well, you got Chuck Lavelle with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. You also hooked up with a gentleman down south named Dr. John. Now, I had read somewhere where you said this was your college education.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, Mac, his real name is Mac Rebenack. That for those listeners out there that may not know that, Dr. John and Mac Rebenack are one and the same.
All right.
And so Mac, we auditioned for Mac after we had run the course with Alex Taylor. And so we had basically the same band backing up Dr. John as we did working with Alex. And, you know, Mac being such a masterful New Orleans pianist, this was an opportunity for me to learn a lot, and I did. We were only with Mac about 6 months, but that was very much like going to college for 4 years, man. I packed a lot in there. And I would like you to know about a DVD that has come out just recently that is a tribute to Dr. John. It's called The Musical Mojo of Dr. John.
Okay.
We did it at the Sanger Theater in New Orleans, and this was about a year and a half ago. A great group of special guests, and I had the honor of being in the core band and also as a featured artist, and it was really a fantastic experience.
Outstanding. Folks, check that out, too, the tribute to Dr. John. Now, wasn't long after that, Chuck, you catch the attention of a guy named Greg Allman. And for folks who are as old as we are, they'll remember that solo album, Laid Back, that you played on.
Well, that's right. What had happened was we had come back off of tour with Dr. John, and of course there was the tragic accident with Duane Allman in 1971, and the Allman Brothers Band went out as a five-piece band for a short time, without replacing Duane, which was a very gutsy and very emotional time, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And so when they came in off of that tour, they were pretty well exhausted mentally and physically, and they needed a little break and to do something different. And Greg wanted to do a solo record, so I was called in to play keys on it, and it was a nice little group of musicians that we worked with together, some of the guys from the band Cowboy, Scott Boyer and Tommy Talton, and Charlie Hayward on bass, and Johnny Sandlin, who also produced the project and played some bass on it. So that, you know, that gave me an entree to get to know Greg better and to work with Greg. And then what happened, Bill, was during the off hours after we'd finished the sessions with Greg, we would have these jam sessions where all the Allman Brothers would come down, and so we'd just carry on and play whatever came to mind and experiment, and this went on for 2 or 3 weeks, and then I get a call from Phil Walden, the owner of Capricorn Records and the manager of the Allmans, and he wanted to meet in his office, and I'm thinking, oh, Lord, what did I do wrong, you know? And I walk in, and there's all the guys in the Allman Brothers band present, and some nice things were passed around the room, and then the shoe dropped, and they said, look, you know, the guys feel like things are going in a pretty interesting direction here, and they want to know if you'd like to join the band.
Yeah.
So, big shock to me, but of course we know the answer was yes.
Right.
I tried to be coy, but I was not very good at it.
Yeah. Well, people may not remember back then that they decided to go, instead of the two guitars back and forth, they were going to use the keyboards and the guitar to have two lead instruments.
Well, that's right. That's exactly what happened. And I think, you know, if I remove myself from the situation, Bill, I have to say I think it was a good decision because you just don't replace Duane Allman.
Right.
You know, he was irreplaceable. And, you know, whoever the poor soul might have been to come in and try to play guitar, at that juncture, it just wouldn't have worked. And so I think it was a good move, and of course it gave me a great opportunity, obviously, and we did the record Brothers and Sisters, and it was a big hit, fortunately, and we had Ramblin' Man as a single, and then of course the instrumental Jessica and several other records wound up being singles off of that album, and it was a number one album for a while. So you know, it was a quick graduation for me, if you will.
Sure. The Great Brothers and Sisters album. We remember that one definitely. Chuck Lavelle with us tonight. You also played on a solo project by Dickie Betts. And I remember I had it on 8-track tape, Highway Call, with Long Time Gone, a couple other good tunes on there. I remember that one, too.
Well, very good, yeah. You know, not to be outdone. Dickie wanted to do a solo record. And, of course, it was a good move for both Dickie and Greg at the time to do something different. You know, they had, as I said earlier, I think they were emotionally spent and they needed to do something different. And it was a real honor to play on Dickie's record. Dickie's still a good friend. I'm sure your listeners know most of the history that the brothers did eventually reform. I, at that time, had my band C-Level.
C-Level, right.
And I just didn't want to abandon C-Level to go back to the Allmans. We were in the middle of doing a record and finishing a record and doing a tour when the band wanted to reform. And, you know, my statement to them was, look, guys, if you give me 3 or 4 months just to promote this record, you know, I'll certainly consider it, and I think it'd be great. But they wanted to move ahead quickly, so they wound up with, as you probably know, Danny Toler. And
Dangerous
Dan,
yes.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, that was the first time that the band went back to more of a guitar-centric sound with Danny and Dickie. And then eventually, of course, with Juan Haynes coming in, Derek Trucks, and we all know the history after that.
As we say, yes, the rest is history with the great Derek Trucks. We've had Warren on the show as well. He's a great guitar player. You also had the chance with C-Level, Chuck, to open up for Lamar Williams, J-Mo, and a couple of other great acts like that. So you sort of stayed in touch with the brothers.
Yeah, we did. I mean, you know, we were on friendly terms. It's just that I felt it was very important for me at the time to give C-Level its due, if you will,
exactly,
to follow through. And so we did, and, you know, we had a great run of it from, I guess it was 76 through 1980 with C-Level. And then, you know, the C-Level kind of had run its course, and the band decided to go on hiatus, and which eventually turned into basically breaking the band up, which was fine. My wife had inherited some land from her grandmother, about 1,000 acres, so that certainly took my focus. And the short story is that I started studying forestry because I was very interested in doing the right thing by the land. And I had a little small trio, and we were playing small clubs, and things were, you know, musically it just wasn't really happening for me. I went home one day expressing some, you know, discourse with my wife, saying basically, look, honey, I'm never going to give up music, but, you know, the phone's not ringing, the career's kind of stagnated, and I'm really interested in forestry and land use, so maybe I better just, you know, not worry about it, just focus on this for a while, and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So she listens very patiently, and at the end of all that, she said, well, that's interesting, Chuck, but guess what? The Rolling Stones called you today.
Imagine that, yeah.
And, of course, I thought she was joking, and I was a little upset. I said, no, come on now. Don't do this to me. And she said, no, I'm serious. Here's the numbers right here. They called earlier today, and I go over there to the phone and call. And within 48 hours, I was on a plane for an audition.
Yeah, and playing alongside Stu, the great Ian Stewart.
The great, and unfortunately late great Ian Stewart.
One of the founding members of the Rolling Stones. Now, you've been on tour with those guys. You played with Stu. You continued to record with the band when they weren't touring. You then became solo keyboardist for the Stones, really, with the exception of, I think, Matt Clifford on Steel Wheels and on that tour, right?
That's absolutely right, yes. And Matt has recently come back into the picture a little bit, playing some keyboards and doing, you know, a little percussion here and there. And he and Mick are very, very close friends. And so they often, and of course Matt is English and lives in the UK. And so oftentimes Mick and Matt get together to do demos and work on songs and such. So, But yeah, that's right. From after Steel Wheels, that, I guess that ended in 1990, and then we did Voodoo Lounge in 94, and from that time on until about a year ago, I had the seat all to myself. And, you know, man, it's just been a real honor to 34 years for me now playing with these guys.
That's crazy.
And the, you know, the role has morphed through the years. When I first came in, it was me and Stu playing, and we kind of swapped around piano and organ, and I learned a lot from Stu. He was very much like a big brother to me. He was very into boogie-woogie piano playing and turned me on to artists like Albert Ammons and Mead Lux Lewis and Pete Johnson and Montana Taylor, and sort of it increased my education, if you will, in that regard. And then when Stu passed on, you know, I had learned a lot of his techniques, so a lot of what he used to do fell on my shoulders, and you know, it was an honor to take it up and to do his parts as well as to contribute my own bits in there. So, you know, now here we are. Who would have believed, Bill, who would have believed that 54 years now?
Yeah.
That the band is still going, and 34 years for me. And that we're still doing it, and the band is better than ever. As you well know, that this year earlier we played the Latin American tour.
Right, I was going to ask you, yeah. And
we
Blue and Lonesome.
Of course, the blues record, and then we did the Desert Trip shows out in California, which were absolutely amazing.
Around
the
Thanksgiving time, right? Yeah,
that's correct. And then. You know, earlier in the year on that Latin American tour, we wound up in Havana. That was the last show we did for the tour. And just so your listeners know, there are DVDs available for the Latin American tour. It's called Olé, Olé, Olé. And the Havana show is called Havana Moon. And those are available now. And, you know, the band continues, as you just mentioned, with the recent blues record, Blue and Lonesome.
Right. And, I wanted to ask you about Cuba, Chuck. How was the situation down there?
Well, you know, it was such an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
It reminded me of back in 1990 when we were on the Steel Wheels tour and we were playing in what used to be Eastern Bloc countries in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we played in Prague in particular. And there was this amazing feeling of freedom. You know, there was this just wonderful attitude that people felt like they could were going to have better lives going forward. The posters in Prague read "Tanks roll out, stones roll in," which was cool.
Yeah.
So playing in Havana to me was very much like that. You had the same feeling of freedom, better things to come. Of course, we did a free show, as you know, in Havana, and we had somewhere around 750,000 people.
Unreal,
it was just an amazing event.
How about playing Hyde Park for the second time?
Yes, sir. Well, of course, that's also a DVD. I think it's called a sunny night, or what was it? I forget the title of it now, but it was
I saw it on the Stones website a little while ago. Yeah,
an awesome event, especially since it came not long after the band's 50th anniversary. So to go back to their beginnings in London and to do a show at Hyde Park, that was a landmark show for sure.
Yeah, I remember talking about the 50-plus years, Chuck. I remember seeing the Stones back in 1982 in Wembley with the Jay Giles Band and Black Uhuru. And I remember picking up a copy of The Sun that morning and saying they had the clever headline, "This may be the last time." You know, like this was going to be the end of the Stones after the Still Life tour. Yeah, right.
Fantastic. Well, I remember that show quite well. That was my first tour with the band in 1982. And
open up with a little snippet of Take the A Train, right?
And then right into Under My Thumb.
Yeah, right.
And one of the things that stands out to me about that particular show was that's where I met the late, great Nicky Hopkins.
Ah, yeah, Nicky Hopkins.
For your listeners that may not know, Nicky contributed quite a lot. Not only keyboards and piano in particular for the Stones, but for many other bands. I mean, Jefferson Airplane and Quicksilver and so many other great bands that he worked with. And he was a well-known session guy, played on many, many records. And he was a hero of mine. And when we got to Wembley, Ronnie Wood came to me and he said, "Nicky's here. You need to meet him." And I was shaking in my boots, man. I was like, "Well, I am not worthy, you know."
Yeah, right. Oh, man.
And Ronnie said, "No, he's a sweet guy. You know, come on out and meet him." So we did meet and got on very well. He said, "You know what, would you like to have lunch?" So while we were in London, after the day after the show, we got together and had a really great lunch and traded stories. And then we became friends. We wrote letters back and forth. He eventually moved to L.A., and then from L.A. to Nashville, and then unfortunately passed away some, mm-hmm. I don't know, 15 years or so ago.
Great story. Now, in addition to all that great work with the Stones through the years, you worked with George Harrison, Eric Clapton. Give us a little insight into working with George.
Oh, man. There was no more wonderful person on the planet. He was so kind. He had such a huge heart. I mean, he was a Beatle, okay?
Yeah.
We all had our favorite Beatles, and growing up, George was my favorite Beatle, man. I used to play guitar in the Misfits as well as keyboards in my first band, and I would take those Beatle records and slow them down from 33 RPM to 16 RPM and try to learn George's guitar parts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what a dream come true to have the opportunity to work with him. And matter of fact, it's so funny because yesterday I heard, I was driving in the car on listening to the radio, and I heard Give Me Love, I think is the title of it. And,
right.
And it was our version of it. It was the Live in Japan version. And so, you know, we did the last tour that George did. It was Eric Clapton and Eric's band backing up George. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah, I have that on cassette, believe it or not. Yeah, I have that. Now, what's your favorite contributions to some of the songs that you've done all time, Chuck?
Well, certainly I would mention Jessica.
Oh, yeah.
On the Brothers and Sisters record. And, you know, most all the songs on that record, I was ready for what was coming, and it was exciting for me, and I wanted to contribute. And so the whole Brothers and Sisters record was a big deal for me back then. And, you know, moving forward, Eric Clapton's Unplugged record. In particular, the song Old Love. But there were others, of course, and that still remains Eric's best-selling record ever, so it's nice to have been on that record. And and then playing with George, playing the harpsichord part for Piggies and playing the piano part for While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and oh, man, I could go on and on.
That's
so
crazy. That's crazy, that stuff. Yeah.
And then I had the wildest thing happen earlier this year in between Stones tours. I get a call from David Gilmour. And, you know, in 1984, I was musical director on a event called Guitar Greats in New Jersey at a place called Capitol Theater. And it was an MTV broadcast, and I was the musical director of it. And we rehearsed everybody, and David was part of that. And everything went well, but then I didn't hear anything from David after that for 10 years. And then I saw him again when we were rehearsing with Eric Clapton in London and briefly, and then I didn't hear for 15 years. And then my wife earlier this year says, Chuck, there's a message on the guest book of your website that somebody says they're David Gilmour. And the message read, hi, Chuck, David Gilmour here, ... honest. and he gave a contact, so, you know, I was a little reluctant. I wasn't sure it was a real deal, but I said, well, why not contact? And so I made the call, and sure enough, he said, yeah, man, you know, I've been thinking about you. I want to change my band up a bit, and I don't know if you're available or not, but I'm going out and touring Europe this summer, and if you are, I'd love to have you. So
wow.
That worked out, and, you know, I got to play Pink Floyd songs and David Gilmour songs and work with another great, great band.
Outstanding. Well, one other thing that you're involved with, as you said, you're an Alabama boy. Roll Tide. Once again, Alabama wins the SEC title. When don't they? And then they beat my Florida Gators in the SEC title game.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah, I mean, who's your favorite Crimson Tide player of all time?
Of all time, well, Joe Willie Namath.
Yeah, I was going to say, Joe Willie, the Snake?
Yeah, the Snake was another great one, of course. But, you know, Leroy Jordan, I mean,
yeah.
Wow, what a great player he was. And, oh, gosh, we could go on and on, you know. But I got to give it up for Jalen Hurts, man. What, you know, for a young fellow to be so composed and so, you know, together and calm in the face of, you know, things that can go wrong. And, you know, he hasn't had the perfect season by any means. But and as we know, Bill, what happens is the first half they seem to scare the heck out of you.
Yeah.
And then the second half they blow it out of the park, you know. So I don't know if that's going to continue, but, you know, we're all a little bit nervous. We're not walking around strutting yet. We've
yeah.
got two more games to go.
They could probably beat the Cleveland Browns. What do you think?
Well, God bless Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
They finally won one.
I hope there's
no
Cleveland Browns fans listening out there tonight.
No, listen, I'm giving it up. They won one.
They
who
did.
Was it they beat? They beat, I can't remember, but they won a couple of days ago.
Well,
I
can't talk, Chuck, because I'm a Jet fan. He's laughing, folks. Yeah, and the only bright time that I can remember is when I was 10 years old, and the guy by the name of Broadway Joe Namath was leading the Jets at that time. So that's the only good days that I remember.
Well, those were amazing days, and we were all so proud of Joe. You know, he had made a name for himself, and being from Alabama, from the South, you know, it was just so great to see him do what he did in those days. And you know, I lived right across the street in Tuscaloosa where I grew up from a family that was friends with Joe, and he would come over for backyard barbecues, and, you know, we were kids, you're talking, you know, 11, 12 years old, and
yeah.
we'd sneak around the bushes and peek through there, and, oh, man, that's Joe Willie.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Well, he's still a great guy to the fans today. When you see him at a card show or an autograph signing, he's still as personable as ever. And he tweets out all the time about the Jets and about Alabama. He's really a great guy.
Absolutely. And you know, before we get off the subject, I certainly have to give it up for the coach. As you know, it's pretty much all about the coaching. And Coach Saban is just a magnificent coach, a great human being. You know what he did at LSU and what
yeah.
he's done at Alabama is just phenomenal, and we are so proud to have him in Tuscaloosa.
Great. Well, outstanding. Well, Chuck, To me, you're a legend. It's been an honor and a pleasure speaking with you tonight. I really thank you taking part out of your day to speak with us.
Well, you're so kind to invite me, Bill. Good luck and all. Happy New Year to you and all to the listeners out there. And hope to see you in 2017.
Same here, Chuck. You take care.
All right, brother. You too. Bye-bye.
Chuck Lavelle, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.